Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
It comes from Luke chapter 15, verses 1 through 10. Luke 15, 1 through 10. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents.
This quarter, we've been thinking about how to serve God with all of our strength. And one of those verses that's helped focus us on that is 1 Corinthians 15:58. If you would, let's say this together. "Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain." And as we continue throughout this year, we're going to be thinking about how we can serve God with all of our strength. I don't know how you like or how you enjoy to travel on long road trips. I don't know if you'd prefer to have somebody that you can talk with the whole way. I don't know if you would prefer maybe just to sleep through the trip if you're not driving. I don't know how you handle long trips. It could be similar to the old story that I've always liked that was told about a car full of ladies that was pulled over traveling through Texas. They were on the interstate and the policeman pulled them over, not for speeding, but for actually going too slow on the interstate. And so there were four ladies in the car, and he talked to the lady who was driving, and she said, "Well, I just got my driver's license, and we've been out, we're on a road trip, and they've decided to let me drive since I just got my license." And so he said, "Well, ma'am, you can't go this slow on the interstate. It's very dangerous to drive this slowly." And she said, "Well, the speed limit says 20. He said, no, that's I-20. That's the name of the interstate. You're looking at the interstate sign." And she said, "Oh, okay." And he looked at her three friends, and they all seemed very pale. One of them was gripping on to the seat in front of her. And he said, "Ma'am, are your friends going to be okay?" And she said, "Yes, they've been like this ever since we got on Highway 158. So if you're thinking about long trips, hopefully yours hasn't been that eventful, but sometimes we can think of some long road trips. You may have had those growing up to see family members. I can remember when we lived in Arkansas and when we lived in Memphis, getting up and making the drive to Michigan to see my family. Always enjoyed getting there, but that road trip could seem pretty long. We're going to look this morning at probably one of the most famous road trips in Scripture. In fact, I wish that I could sort of snap my fingers and we would all read Luke chapter 15 as if we were reading it for the first time. I say that because it's a very familiar chapter of Scripture. But as we go through our series in Deeper Faith and we're going through the Gospel of Luke, it's just almost impossible to study Luke without stopping in this chapter. It's almost like trying to go through Matthew without stopping in the Sermon on the Mount. I mean, this is just such a key central passage in Luke's Gospel. And so we're going to be looking at all three of the parables Jesus tells here. And I know it's familiar. And I know you might be thinking to yourself, okay, I know what this is about. Lost and something is found. And okay, the prodigal son and he comes home and everything is great. I understand that. You've probably heard lots of sermons about that. But I'd like for us to think very carefully this morning about the parables. And it may be that we don't learn anything we didn't already know But it might be that we grow to appreciate even more the love of God. I hope that's the case as we go through and as we think about these individual parables. It's important for us to notice, as Ben read that passage for us, the first couple of verses that he read set the context for everything Jesus is going to say. Verse 1 tells us of Luke chapter 15 that all the tax collectors and the sinners were coming to listen to Jesus. In other words, if you wanted to find a group that the Pharisees would be more reluctant to associate with, I don't know who else you could choose other than tax collectors and sinners. Tax collectors, of course, not dealing with people who just, we might think of today, collected taxes owed to the government. In this day, these were individuals who would have been considered traitors. They were given the right to collect taxes from their own countrymen to give to the oppressors. And they had a reputation of not being very honest, of keeping some taxes for themselves. And so you have these tax collectors and these sinners. And they're coming near him to listen to Jesus. So look at the statement the Pharisees make in verse 2. This man receives sinners and eats with them. The Pharisees said a lot of different things about Jesus that we read in the Gospels. But did you know this is a true statement? This is an accusation they give that is true. Jesus does spend a lot of time around sinners and tax collectors, a lot of time teaching those who would have been considered either on the fringes of society or would have been considered people the Pharisees didn't want to be seen with, didn't want in their homes. Yet Jesus is reaching out to them. When he's asked about it, he responds by saying that his mission is to seek and save the lost. And the Gospel of Luke shows us several occasions where Jesus does that. Now, it's important to bear this in mind because when Jesus tells each of these three parables, he's responding to that situation, that they're looking at Jesus and they're saying, why is he hanging around these kinds of people? And so he begins by telling a story about a shepherd and sheep. Now, this would have been easy for them to understand. They knew the importance of shepherding. In their time, they understood the value of one sheep. They understood the wool that could come from that sheep. The fact that herds that families had would have been very important to them. In many cases, you would even have the whole village or a group of families that kept their herd and their flocks together. And so they knew which sheep were theirs. When Jesus talks about being the good shepherd in the Gospel of John, he mentions the fact that the sheep know and respond to their shepherd. And so shepherding and sheep were very important. And he tells that story about someone who had 100 sheep and one is lost. And he leaves the 99 in open pasture, leaves them in the open field to go after that one sheep that was lost. Because sheep were important. It wasn't a numbers game. It wasn't just, well, we've got 99, so one doesn't really matter. Sheep were very important. And he was going to go after that sheep and he was going to find it and bring it back. And so they understood the rejoicing that would come when you recovered a lost sheep. Some of the people standing there might have been in a similar situation before. Maybe they had found a sheep that was lost. They would understand that. And then he tells a second story. He talks about a woman who is looking for a coin. And the idea is that she goes through her entire house to look for this lost coin. Now, obviously, in the ancient world, losing a coin would be something you would want to be concerned with. That would have been something important. But also, some have speculated that this might be a special coin, that this might be part of a 10-coin set that would provide sort of a headdress for married women. And so it may be that this was something so special to her that it might be the equivalent of ladies of losing your wedding ring. And so maybe she's looking through this house for that. Either way, they would have understood the value of looking through a house and trying to find a coin. And especially in the ancient world where homes might only have one window, they'd be fairly dark, that you would be searching frantically just to see the glint off a little coin that might be laying in the dust. They could understand those stories. Something's lost, it's found, and there's great rejoicing. In every single parable, when whatever is lost has been found, there is rejoicing. And so then we read this third and more famous parable. In fact, it's been called by some the greatest short story ever told. And I'd like for us just to think about the text here, beginning in verse 11. With that as the backdrop, then Jesus says, There was a man who had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that is coming to me. And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion, and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, Bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring in his hand and shoes on his feet. And bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this, my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. But look what happens when his older brother gets the news. Verse 25, Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he called one of his servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, Look, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. And he said to him, Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. I know that's an extended reading, and I realize that's a familiar parable, but I want us to get this in our mind, because one of the pictures that I always had reading through this parable was that when the younger son leaves and he goes to a far country, he's leaving one location and going to another location. In other words, it's two places on a map. I've thought about that physically before. But you know, as I read this parable, it's making a spiritual point. I don't know that when we think of a far country, that it would be good for us to think about it as a place on a map. I think it indicates a relationship between the son and his father. He's going to a far country because he's decided to remove himself from his father. The reason that's important is because in this parable, there are two different journeys to a far country. There are two different journeys away from the father. The father has to go out to both sons. The elder son was lost. The older son is still at home, but in a sense, spiritually, he's in a far country. He's in a different place. And that's evidenced by when his father comes out to speak to him. And so we see two different journeys to a far country, and I'd like for us just to reflect on those this morning. How is it that we could get lost the way they did? How is it that we might drift into a far country? It may be that that's closer than we think it is. The first journey is by this younger son. Now again, keep in mind the audience that Jesus is speaking to here. And so when they hear this story about a father and two sons, and then when they hear about a younger son that goes to his father and makes this request, I want my inheritance. I want what is coming to me. I want my share. If a Pharisee had been listening to that, or anyone really who had grown up familiar with Jewish law and Jewish customs, they might have just shuddered at the fact that a younger son would have that level of disrespect for a father. To essentially say, you know what's going to happen when you die and when I get my share of the inheritance? Let's go ahead and pretend that that's already happened. I want what I have. I want what's coming to me. I want my share of our wealth, of our family's inheritance. And remember, too, when you think about the inheritance that would have been passed down from father to son, You have that estate that would not only have included wealth, it might have even included land. Land was very important. And so you imagine all of those things, and then a younger son asks for it, and the father grants the request. That would have been shocking to Jesus' listeners. An insubordinate son like that doesn't receive punishment for that kind of request. He doesn't receive angry words from his father. Instead, his father lets that happen. You see, the first thing we can do if we're going to drift off into a far country, that might happen if we disrespect our father rather than honor him. If I'm disrespecting my father rather than honoring him, I might be headed towards that far country. In Jewish practice, when you divided up the estate, if you divided up the inheritance before the death of someone, it was irrevocable. This would have been essentially a point of no return. If you get this inheritance now, there's no going back. And yet he still wants it. He wants it because he has an idea of what he wants to do and where he wants to go. And so instead of honoring the father who had given him so many things, he disrespectfully says, just go ahead and pay up. Just give me what I'm due and I'll be gone. And so he does that. That disrespect seems to stem from that selfishness. I've got a plan for my life, and I just want us to think very quickly about how easily selfishness can creep in even to our relationship with God. And it might not take too long to get to that far country of separation from God. It might just take a few steps of selfishness. A few times where I say, you know what, I think I know better than God's plan for my life. Or when I think, I've really got things figured out. And so we need to challenge ourselves and ask ourselves, are we using what we have? Are we using what we've been given in a way that glorifies God? Or are we allowing our own selves to dominate, our own desires to dominate? When is the last time we used our blessings to serve God? When's the last time I used my vehicle to serve God? To go make a visit? Someone who is sick or hurting, someone who needs encouragement, to give somebody a ride that needs a ride to a doctor's appointment or needs a ride to a worship service. When's the last time I used the home that I have to serve God, to show hospitality towards someone, to invite someone over to get to know them better, to see how I can encourage them? When's the last time I used my phone to serve God? To call somebody who needed a person to talk to him, to send an encouraging text message. We have so many blessings. And to guard ourselves from drifting off into a far country, it's important to ask, are we using those things for God? Not only did he disrespect the Father rather than honoring him, he also looked for fulfillment in the world rather than his Father. We might think of it from our perspective, looking at this parable, to seek fulfillment in the world rather than the Lord. He goes out and he's got friends as long as he's got money. And as long as he can spend, he has people that are around him and he's spending recklessly. And because of that reckless nature of spending, he runs out of money. And then famine strikes. Because tragedy is always a possibility. It's always a possibility that bad things can happen. And if I've been living recklessly, and if I've been seeking for fulfillment somewhere other than God, I'm not going to have anything when tragedy strikes. And when famine strikes, and he didn't have anywhere to turn. And can you imagine the look on the faces of those Pharisees as they heard Jesus describe this young man working with pigs and getting to a point where he desired to eat what the pigs, these unclean animals, were eating? I mean, it might be unpleasant to us to think about eating what a pig would eat, but it would have been even more unpleasant for someone who viewed them as unclean under the Jewish law. Can you imagine the looks on their faces? And so when he comes home to the father and you have this incredible scene where the father runs out and he meets him and he has this celebration that's going to be planned. A fattened calf is going to be killed, which you wouldn't just do for your family. You would do if a lot of people were going to come and were going to celebrate. At this point, I would imagine that Jesus' listeners were a little bit confused. They were trying to understand why the son who had been so disrespectful had been allowed to leave in the first place, and then when he comes back, he's welcomed home. And so enter into the second son. I have to imagine, again, just based on what we know about history, I have to imagine that for many of the Pharisees who would have been listening to Jesus' statement, the older brother makes a lot of sense. That he's kind of the first person in this parable that's starting to really make sense. Okay, he wants there to be consequences for this individual. But the older brother was lost in a different way. He wasn't lost because he had physically left, but he was lost in his relationship with his father. He was so focused on his own accomplishments rather than what his father had given him. Did you notice that kind of language? I have always served you. He's pulling out the resume. I can't believe you would do this. Don't you know what I've done for you? Here's his father. Without his father, he wouldn't have what he has. But he's looking at him and saying, why don't you just look at my record? Look at what's happened. Look at everything that I've done. And so if we're thinking about that second journey, it begins to a far country when we start focusing on our own accomplishments, in our case, from our perspective, rather than God's grace. In other words, when we start looking at our own record sheets and think, you know what, I've been so obedient and I've done everything I need to do, God should really be thankful for me. He should be grateful for everything I've given Him. Now we know obedience is important. We know it's necessary. But if I get so focused on my own accomplishments that I forget that I have no right to expect anything from the Creator of the entire universe, that I have no right to expect anything from the God whom I have sinned against so many times, all of us have in our lives, if I start focusing on my own accomplishments, I'm going to lose sight of my real relationship with God. And He uses those phrases. When this son of yours came home. I talk about distancing yourself as if I'm not related to him. It's this son of yours that comes home. And look, you have this great celebration. Look at what he's done. Not only was he focused on his own accomplishments, he was focused on his brother's sins instead of his own. He didn't mention any sins that he'd committed, but he sure knew a lot about what his brother had done. He gives that detail of devouring wealth with prostitutes. He's really accusing specifically his brother of certain sins. And he's saying, do you realize what he has done? Do you realize where he has been? Do you know why your money is gone? Do you know what he spent it on? And look how focused he is on someone else rather than taking care of himself. I have to think as I read through this that the older brother would send a strong message in this parable to the Pharisees who are looking at Jesus and saying, I can't believe you're eating with these people. Do you know what they've done? Do you know where they've been? Do you know what they've said? Do you know how they've used their money? Do you know where they got their money? Why would you ever associate with them? In fact, that older brother message is probably a pretty important reminder for us as well, isn't it? It's so easy to get focused on what we've done and how many things we've done for the Lord. But you know, it's possible to be in a far country and still be sitting in a pew in a worship service. Just like it's possible for this older brother to be in his father's estate, but to be removed from him, it's possible for us to show up when we're supposed to show up and to worship and to be in Bible class and yet have an attitude that has removed us from a right relationship with God. It begins when we start thinking about how much we've done, and then it also continues if we start looking at other people and saying, I'm glad I'm not like that person over there. Or, that was a good Bible class. You know, I can tell you who needed to hear that. So-and-so over here. It can start if we start viewing people who come in to this congregation kind of with holding them at arm's length. Maybe a little suspicious. Well, I don't know what they've done. Or maybe we know something that someone's done. Or when they decide to do something that's right, we still tuck that away in our minds and say, boy, you know, I know where they've been. I know what decisions they've made. And we have that harsh, negative attitude. And if we keep that attitude up, that'll take us to a far country. It'll take us to a place that's removed from the love of God. We know that actions have consequences. We know that obedience is important. But this parable reminds us that when someone turns back to God, there is rejoicing. So how do we get home? Either way. Whichever journey we're on, the journey of the first son or the second son, how do we get home? Well, we see it very clearly in that younger son's journey. When we first have to come to our senses. I love the way it's depicted there as he describes him standing there in that pigsty. As he's thinking about these pigs that are there, and he came to his senses in verse 17. It's almost as if he snaps out of this daydream and says, "Wait a minute, what am I doing? There's something that's wrong here." We might refer to that as hitting bottom. Getting to the point where you realize, I can't go on any longer the way I'm living. I don't know what event that would take in your life or in my life to get to that point. You may have had a moment like that where you thought, this can't go on any longer. I cannot handle this. I have got to change. It's that kind of moment that we need to experience to understand, I can't do this on my own. And so he has to come to his senses, and then he decides to turn back. It's good that he came to his senses when he was standing there, but he had to physically do something about it. He had to go back home. And when he came back home, just like in the other two parables, there was rejoicing. I don't know if we can emphasize this enough. When someone comes back to the Lord, when someone comes to the Lord for the first time, or when a Christian comes back to the Lord, there is rejoicing. There should be rejoicing here on earth, but there is rejoicing in heaven. That is unbelievably exciting. And the reason that's exciting is because of how high the stakes are. All three of these parables refer to individuals who were lost. And we don't use that term very much today. If you read the literature that's out there, it's not lost anymore. The term is usually unchurched. And I understand why that's used, and I know that. I know that our language, we have to be careful in the sense that we want to be polite when we're dealing with other people, but there needs to be a reality understood, and that is, if I'm not a part of God's family, then I'm lost. And that's serious. And because it's so serious, when someone becomes a Christian, it's a time of rejoicing. It's a time of rejoicing because the stakes are so high for someone to be lost. And so we have this picture of a father who breaks with the cultural traditions and goes and runs out to meet this son that has been so disrespectful and has been so sinful but has decided to turn back. It's a beautiful picture. I think it's the reason this parable has been so popular, because it's an important reminder for all of us of the love that God has for us. That's how we make our way home. Far country might be closer than we think it is. It might be easy to drift off in that direction. And so it could be that, like the older brother, we have to stop and come to our senses. Maybe we need to say, you know, I've had a bad attitude. I haven't been serving the way that I should be serving. And I've been so upset when I was working and other people weren't working that I've lost sight of why I'm doing this to begin with. It strikes me that the younger son, when he gets his speech ready to come home to say, I've sinned in your sight and I want to be just like your servant, he comes prepared to be his servant, but the father wants him to be his son. When he goes out to the older son, who already has that relationship of a father-son bond between his father, the older son is talking like a servant. I've been serving you faithfully. He's not talking like a son. And it may be that our attitude has gotten us to the point where we're so focused on what we're doing, we've forgotten why we do it. We've forgotten what God has done for us. So we might need to come to our senses. We might need to turn back. And if we do that, there'll be rejoicing. There'll be great rejoicing because God loves His children and wants them to be at home. He wants them to come home. Think for just a moment about the way this could have ended. The son comes back, the younger son walks back, and instead of running out to him, the father is just standing at the door. He comes up to the father and he says the speech that he's prepared. I've sinned in your sight and I just want to be one of your hired servants. And the father looks at him. He thinks for a minute. He says, I guess that's fair. You can be one of my servants. Wouldn't that be a fair way for the story to end? In fact, based on what the son had done, that would even be a generous way for the story to end. It wouldn't be uncommon in that culture for a fair ending to be the father to say, once we made this deal, and once I gave you your inheritance, that was irrevocable. There's no going back. So good luck. Find someone else in town who will take care of you. That might have been the fair way to end it. That might have been justice. But that's not the way Jesus ended the parable. And isn't it a blessing that when we look at what we've done in our lives, we know what the just result would be, but that's not the way God has written the story of Christians who decide to serve Him. We have the possibility of coming home to a God who will forgive us. And when you think of this feast that's set up, we're reminded of a heavenly feast we can enjoy with God. Not, again, because we're so wonderful, but because of the grace God has given for those who are willing to obey Him. If you need to obey that grace this morning, if you need to come forward, put Christ on in baptism, if you need to come home, if there's any way we can help you, please come as we stand, as we sing together.